Hello and welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and today we're going to get psychic. It's about intuition and psychic ability, and to help us with this show is an author of a book called Psychic or Psychotic, Jonna Rae Bartkus. Jonna Rae, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.
I think this is such a... Well, you know that I also am a practicing intuitive. I don't call myself psychic. And I think it really doesn't matter. It's just a preference of words. And this is a book... I've read this book, and I really love it. And you know, you and I are on the same page about working multidimensionally. And so it's in my heart to really climb into this subject matter with you. Mm-hmm. And now the title Psychic or Psychotic, I know, comes from anyone who's in this business. When we are receiving information and then express it to others, and it's information that normal brains don't hear, at least don't consciously hear, and then we pass it on to people. We don't even know ourselves if what we're saying is true or not, because we're only getting it from some other source.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said that you don't like to call yourself a psychic. I think so much of it is the semantics, because everybody is doing this constantly, whether you want to call it intuition or a hunch or a, you know, a gut feeling, or a vibe. You know, we're always processing information like this, but in our culture, we're not taught to really put a heck of a lot of emphasis on it. If we're calling it psychic ability, if we're calling it common sense, then absolutely, yes, you pay attention to it. So I think so much of it is in how it's presented to other people. How we discuss it with other people.
Well, you and I have talked about this, and understand that so many people are afraid to express what they're receiving because they don't understand how valid it is. And so there's a lot of fear, and in my school, when I've been teaching intuition to so many people over the years, so many of them would start to receive and be aware of the information they're receiving, and then clam up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they it's like, this can't be. Maybe I'm psychotic. And by the way, there is a great test to know if you're psychotic or not. And if you had learned this when you were young, it might have saved you, you know, from at least, you know, your own worries about how you're being perceived by others. It's and then you could claim, I am not psychotic. I've tested myself. The test is very simple. We can all do it. What happens when you tickle yourself?
Nothing.
Oh, what do you mean? Tickling is tickling. You can't tickle yourself?
I'm trying it right now and nothing's happening.
Oh, I guess you're not psychotic. What it is that the reason we laugh when we're tickled is fear, basically. It's like, because we're afraid that the person who's tickling us has loose fingers and who knows what that'll touch next. So it's the unexpected. It's the fear of the unexpected that gets us laughing. And when we tickle ourselves, we're in charge. There's no doubt where our fingers are going to go next. So there's no surprise, no reason to laugh about it. And
I wish I would have known this several decades ago.
But let me tell you that people who are psychotic, when they tickle themselves, they laugh. Because they're not in touch. They don't know what their fingers are going to do next. So they're laughing at themselves because they're really a couple of different people there. So that's how we can be sure. And so we now know that you're not psychotic.
Oh, thank goodness. Well, it's fun because I have lots of friends who just happen to be like psychologists and psychiatrists, and they frequently come to me for advice about things, like even
sure.
with clients where maybe they're too close to a situation or they're just using a clinical model where, you know, this happens and then that means this and that means this, and it's kind of a linear way of processing information. And what happens whenever you really tap into your natural intuitive ability, you're not thinking in a linear fashion anymore. So you can start connecting dots that wouldn't appear to have anything in correlation on the surface. But then once you really get into it, you start to find out, oh my gosh, you know, yes, that could happen that way. That could mean that. And even people like Bill Gates, well, back in the 70s, he was saying that computers could change people's lives. And people were pretty much saying, you're nuts. You know, that could never happen. And look what would have happened if he would have paid attention to the people who were trying to edit his thoughts.
Right. Well, it's all that editing that goes on. And as you said, with therapists, I noticed at one point over the years that about 10% of my clients were therapists. And what they're looking for is what they can't hear themselves. And some of them are good at that. But you and I, you know, we specialize in that, in hearing what other people aren't hearing. And so you grew up this way. And that's why your book is so fantastic, because it's really the life story of being born into these gifts and using them when you were young in ways that were really upsetting the people around you.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, especially with my family. And normally what happens when a child is about 3 or 4 and they start saying that they're talking to their grandma and their grandma died several years ago, you know, they'll be corrected. You know, no, you can be talking to grandma, she's dead, and no, you don't know what the dog is thinking. And so it's kind of disciplined out of us, you know, quit daydreaming and pay attention. And the only reason that I did not do this myself was in my dreams at night. And I remember this starting heavily about when I was 4, I would have these very, you know, loving beings showing up. I don't remember actually seeing them, but I remember feeling them and hearing them. And I remember one dream in particular that I kept having, where I'd be standing on one end of the clothesline, you know, the old-fashioned clotheslines with the ropes outside. And the voices said, okay, you can do it, come on. And I flew to the other side of the clothesline. And then they said, that's great, and I'll turn around and come back. And so it's like I had these teachers who were helping me learn what this was and use it and trust it. And as I was, So I learned pretty much because of how my dad would do the Twilight Zone music when I would share something that I saw or knew. I learned to not talk about it, but I was constantly feeling it. And I remember in fifth grade there was this one teacher who I just felt sick in my stomach when I was around him. I just, you know, did not want to be in his class. It was a pretty nasty thing. And a few years after that, I learned that he had been arrested for child molesting. So it was a thing where I was always picking up the energy around people and seeing colors and all that, and I just kind of learned not to really discuss it all that much because it was ridiculed.
And yet, once you got a little bit older, you experimented more with friends in college and doing things.
Oh, college was like Disneyland for me because I wasn't living at home anymore, and so I could experiment with these different things. And I would do things like think of the professors during exams, what's the answer to number 4, and I'd get the answer, and I'd make Dean's List, and I would lead seances in the dorm, and the mobiles that were hanging from the ceiling then would be rocking back and forth, and the tops would explode off the soda bottles. There were all kinds of things going on, and I did not have a good spiritual base for it. I was a kid in a candy store just playing with all this stuff, you know, levitating those heavy spool tables at frat parties and all this stuff, and the kids were kind of terrified of me. The one thing in college that I did that I think was a good thing was I talked one of the professors into being the faculty advisor for an independent study project that I did, and he would bring people who were sick into his office, and he would stand there with a stopwatch, and whether these people had headaches or bruises, there was a cheerleader who had a pulled hamstring, I would work in their energy field, you know, standing there with one hand, with my left hand up to pull in energy from the universe, and my right hand about 3 inches above them in their energy field, and just kind of moving my hand around, and they would get better. And so there's a documented study of this at Rider College in Trenton, New Jersey.
Well, that's amazing. And you know, there are different levels of abilities. We all, you know, I've been teaching this for so many years, and so many of the students would have different gifts. And I always say that some of us can see better, some of us can hear better, some of us can sense better. And a lot of people who are born with psychic awareness usually are better at seeing at first, and then hearing and doing all the other things too. But a lot of people who are psychic can't see as easily than as you can hear. And so it might be discouraging to people to watch somebody like you and all of the different gifts that you have and wonder, why don't they have that? Well, they might have something that really works great,
mm-hmm.
intuitively, psychically, and aren't given enough credit. I once took a course with a guy who was teaching clairvoyance and how to see better. And I found that you can't learn it very well. It's the number of people who were in the class when it started who were clairvoyant, there were about six or seven of them, and then at the end of the class there were only six or seven people who were clairvoyant. So nobody else really learned to be. Everyone was trying. But that was a chance I had to understand my hearing better, and so I said, all right, I'm going to test myself. And everything the professor, the teacher was asking people to see, I could hear about and give a description about it just audibly. And mm-hmm. and then I found I was correct. And so our hearing can be just as good, but it's certainly not as fantastic.
Well, you make an excellent point with that, too. When I was 24, at that point I was a newspaper editor, and I moved up the ranks because as a reporter I could tell when people were lying or what they were leaving out of the story, and so I became, I won all kinds of awards as a reporter and got promoted up the ranks. But when I was 24, I realized I had to find out if I was psychic or psychotic, which is where the title of the book comes from. So I left to go on this two-year spiritual quest. And what happened, I ended up at a light center in North Carolina. I was asked to come be the resident psychic and the newsletter editor because I had the whole journalism background thing going. And what happened was people were coming to me for readings over and over and over again. And I was a little uncomfortable with this. And so I said in a meditation, okay, God, anybody can do what I'm doing. I don't want to be a guru because absolutely everybody can do this. And then this voice literally said, so teach them how. And then I said, well, how in the world do I do that? And then I got step one, step two, step three. And so since 1979, I've been teaching this class that I call Practical Spirituality 101. And what I tell the people when they come in is, you are not getting out of this room until you do an accurate psychic reading. And it always scares the husbands who've been dragged along and all that. But and I tell people, I'm going to teach you one way of doing this, and you're going to go on and develop your own way. And to talk more about what you were saying with the hearing, in one class, one time I was teaching in South Carolina, I was walking the people through what the different symbols meant, what different colors meant, and saying, okay, in this particular energy center, you're likely to see this and this. And then I led them on a guided meditation, and then I go around from person to person to say, okay, what did you see? And this one man in particular is being very adamant about how he didn't see anything. He just didn't get any kind of an image. Even if he pretended to see something, there was nothing there. And then I said, okay, well, what happened when we did this meditation? And he said, well, I heard a song. And I said, really? Well, what was the song? And it turns out the song that he heard pertained directly to the person he was looking at. It gave them exactly the information and the confirmation that they needed and was very, very valuable to them. But it had nothing at all to do with seeing anything. It was all what he could hear. So you're right. The gifts come in different ways, but everybody has this ability.
It's so helpful to understand how we do that, so we can all really walk around feeling a little bit more sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is looking for the connections. It's almost like the Na'vi on Pandora in the movie Avatar, where they just had this intuitive connection to each other and to the tree and to their entire environment. When we look to try to find that kind of a connection, we will feel it. I I tell my students, it's like, you know, you're driving your car, you're not thinking that much about it, and then suddenly you decide that maybe you might want to get a Subaru Forester, and suddenly you start seeing all these Subaru Foresters on the road, and they didn't just miraculously appear, you're just starting to pay attention to them now, and you're open to the possibility that they're there, and then suddenly you're able to see them.
That's great. You know, we all need to tune in more, get more conscious. There's so many things we're unconscious about. And so if we can help people be more conscious about their higher senses, that's great. Mm-hmm. I mean,
an easy way to do that, a really quick way, is just to stop whatever you're doing and take a really, really deep cleansing breath. Because as you bring more oxygen into your body and into your brain, you start to chemically change how your brain functions. And you actually do go up into a higher mental state and you become aware. You sense things, you hear things, you feel things that normally you're kind of screening out through the clutter of, you know, the chatter of the monkey brain and just the day-to-day things where you're being distracted. But just stopping and taking that deep breath, or ideally a couple deep breaths, is going to instantly launch you into a place of higher consciousness where you can start to become aware of all these wonderful little coincidences and synchronicities that are constantly there.
Well, we also know that it's a different brainwave, and it's a frequency. There are different brainwave frequencies that we utilize, and what you're suggesting is a way to kind of raise the frequency up to perhaps an alpha level.
Absolutely.
And I always, you know, I learned many, many years ago, it took the Silva mind control technique course in 1975, a long time ago, and I learned there how to tune in using the alpha frequency, the alpha brainwave, and how valuable that was. And so we can all find that in ourselves. It's available to everybody.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. And I think part of it too is going back to looking at the world the way a child does. It's like everything is full of wonder. Everything is part of the discovery. Everything is part of the exploration. And children also do the tummy breathing. You know, they do the deep breaths. And so they're kind of always in that very aware state. And there's a beautiful, beautiful story about this from Dan Millman, you know, the Way of the Peaceful Warrior author. And a little four-year-old girl was excited because her parents were bringing her baby brother home from the hospital. And when they brought him home, she insisted that she be able to speak to him by herself without them in the room. And the parents were understandably a little concerned. So they had the baby monitor on so they could hear what was going on. And they were standing right outside the door. But the little four-year-old girl went over to the crib. And she looked in and she said to her little brother, "Tell me what God looks like. I'm starting to forget." And
beautiful.
I just love that story because it talks about having that kind of a connection, that kind of a an integration of spirit and form that we gradually start to lose as we get older. It's disciplined out of us. We get distracted by bright, shiny objects like, you know, ice cream and jobs and relationships. And we start to forget what God looks like, and we start to forget that God permeates everyone and everything.
Although the idea of God looking like something in particular is probably not something that we can decide upon, even if we are intuitive. I think it is understanding that we can see in the spirit world, when we can actually be with our higher support out there.
I think it's an energetic connection. Yeah, just that energetic link up that she was missing, that she was feeling. I don't think it had to be like the guy in the white toque and a beard. You know, I think it was more like just that familiar energy that can be at the source of everything.
Yeah, that's beautiful. But you do see spirits, and as a matter of fact, in your book you say, "I see dead people, so you don't have to."
That I discovered, and I guess this is true for teaching anything, but particularly for teaching things like you and I teach, if you can make people relax and get out of the stigma that this is weird, that this is somehow frightening, and they can relax and laugh, it's going to be okay. And so that's why I wanted to have something that was kind of humorous to make people relax. But one example of just kind of seeing people in spirit everywhere was my first time at a new dentist's office, and the hygienist was being polite and making conversation, and she said, so what do you do? And I figured, oh, go for it. So I said, well, I'm a writer, and I'm also an intuitive consultant. And she kind of rolled her eyes a little bit, and then she said sarcastically, really? Well, then where's that box of stuff I'm supposed to send to my sister? And I immediately said, it's under the sink. And she looked at me kind of funny, and then she was talking about some other things, and she mentioned her late grandmother. And I said, well, she's standing right next to you. She's wearing a pink suit and pearls and smiling, and she's so proud of you. And the hygienist was, she scoffed then and said, well, I know you're wrong about that, because grandmother never wore anything like that. And I figured, well, that was that. And meanwhile, the grandmother was still smiling and waving and had her arm around her granddaughter, and it was very sweet. And a few days later, the granddaughter called me. Well, the hygienist called me and said that she and her husband looked under the sinks in their house and found the box of stuff for her sister under one of them, and her mother reminded her that her grandmother had worn the pink suit and pearls to her wedding and was buried in that outfit. So, that was great confirmation that, yeah, they're right here. And I died from a brain aneurysm 21 years ago. And what happened when I flatlined was I just floated out of my body, but I was right there. I was just in a different dimension. And so that showed me that it's not like the instant you die, you immediately go to another dimension or plane of consciousness or heaven or hell. You know, your essence, your consciousness can remain right in that same space. And so it's like Chief Seattle said, there is no death, there's only a change of worlds. And I have a personal experience that's true.
Well, we could probably do a whole show about the afterlife and what that's all about. And certainly you and I have had a lot of experiences that way with people who have died. And mm-hmm. and I
don't know if that would work well on the radio, Peter. It might be too much dead air.
Well, we'll invite a lot of those spirits just to hang out with us. They don't have to contribute to the show.
Okay.
But it's so enriching to see what people do after they die and to follow them around, and I've done that quite a number of times, and help them also.
Yeah, well, and there was a beautiful experience. I recently did a reading for a 15-year-old young man whose dad had died 6 years earlier. And, of course, you know, it was the boy's heart ached to have some kind of a connection with him. And so we're sitting there talking, and I said, could I do a Diksha blessing for you? And this is where you put your hands on the person's head, and you kind of rewire their brain. You know, it's just this powerful positive energy flows through you and into them. And he said, yes. And I said, and your dad is standing right behind you. He is so proud of you. He loves you. He's with you all the time. And then I stood up and put my hands on the young man's head and did the blessing. It was only about like 90 seconds. And then I removed my hands, and he opened his eyes. And then his eyes got as big as dinner plates. And he said, I still feel hands on my head. And I said, that's your dad. He loves you so much. And that boy's whole perception of who he was and everything just shifted. I mean, he even told me later, we were sitting out, you know, on the porch in the dark just looking at the stars, and he said, I feel like I've been asleep and now I'm awake, because he had that physical, very loving connection with his dad, who had been in the spirit world for 6 years. And you know this too, as someone who can help bring this information to people and bring this kind of proof to people, there is nothing more humbling and more gratifying than seeing how something like that can truly shift the way that someone is going to live the rest of their lives.
When my mother had passed on and we had her ashes, and we were out on a boat in the Hudson River, right outside of the town that she was born in, I was pouring the ashes into the river, I felt her hands on my hands. And that was just such a beautiful experience.
Oh, that is so beautiful. And you know what? By people like us who have a certain amount of credibility, I know that you've done a lot in the corporate world, and I've won Emmy Awards and things like that, so we have a certain amount of, you know, street cred. For us to come out of the spiritual closet and share these experiences that might be labeled psychotic by some people, what we're doing is we're making it safe for everyone else to acknowledge the fact that, oh my gosh, yes, this happens to me. And I know now that I'm not crazy and I'm not making this up, because that's the one thing I'm hearing over and over again from people who are reading the book, that, and the purpose of writing it wasn't, look how great I am. It's not that at all. It's like, here's what happened to me, and here's how you tap into that for yourself, and here's how you use it in a positive way so that you're not scared of it. And hearing from people ranging from a 14-year-old girl to a retired woman in her 80s to an auto mechanic out in California, that now they understand more about what's happening in their own life. That's why you and I talk about this. That's why we risk being, you know, ridiculed, because we know it's real, and we want to make it safe for other people to accept that part of themselves.
But also, when we do say what we say, people understand that we're correct, because they know what we're saying. When we tell people what we're receiving for them and about them, it's information that they corroborate.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
And so we're, you know, it's, otherwise it would be, we'd be crazy. We'd be psychotic. And so we're not. So this is, the book is Psychic or Psychotic. And it's such a pleasure to read a book that, you know, is a difficult journey. It's hard to live in this world being accepted and managing your gifts in a way that works in the world. You won an Emmy. You did PR for Disneyland, and while you were doing that, you were actually hearing from Walt Disney.
Oh yeah, I will never forget that, because I grew up with Walt Disney being this very sweet, loving, grandfatherly type guy on TV, and so when I first started working at Disneyland, I started having these dreams, and Walt Disney would storm into the dream. He'd been drinking, he was swearing, he hated women, he was just a tyrant, and he was saying, you know, why the bleep isn't marketing doing this and this and this, and he was very demanding and very impatient, and then he would storm out of the dream, and when I got awake in the morning, I would write up what he was ranting about as a proposal. I would give it to my boss. He would take it to corporate meetings in Orlando, and it would end up becoming new policy for the Disney Corporation. So Walt Disney is still very much involved in running the corporation, and I found out from people who had actually worked with him that that's exactly how he was. He did drink, he did yell and swear, and he was a tyrant, and he didn't think women were capable of running anything. So,
well, at least he honored you by showing up and ranting through you to get work done in his company.
Well, he knew that I wasn't going to just try to, you know, take a bunch of drinks to drown out the voices, which is what a lot of people do. I think a lot of people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol are incredibly psychic, and they are trying to drown out the information that they're getting, because they're taught it's not okay to have this kind of connection.
Well, one way that you've dealt with your connection is to write a book about it. And this book, I really want to recommend it, because it was so engrossing, and there's so many beautiful stories in it, and ways that you've helped people, and trials and tribulations of your life, being who you are, and so it's helpful, I think, to so many people who want to know more about being psychic, or what that means in the world. So we're running near the end of the show, and I want to make sure people know that you are Jonna Rae Bartges, B-A-R-T-G-E-S, Jonna Rae, J-O-N-N-A-R-A-E, and your book, Psychic or Psychotic. How can people reach you?
They can reach me through my website, happymediumbook.com, and they can so they can also send me an email at Jonna Rae, J-O-N-N-A-R-A-E, at happymedium.us. and I would love to hear from them or answer questions. And also, I'm compiling other people's experiences for another book. And so if anybody would want to share things that have happened to them, I would love to hear your stories, too.
That's great. You know, what a service. And it's very courageous to be who you are in the world. And I want to commend you for being that person who can walk your talk and let everybody know what we're really made of.
Well, thank you, Peter, so much. And thank you for spreading the word and letting people know they're not psychotic.
Right. And so grateful for you to be on the show today. John Array, thank you. Yes. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at peter@heartriver, H-E-A-R-T, river.org. And thank you so much for listening.